everyone. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, welcome, everyone. It's Dr. Terry. Thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate you. I have another great, great program for you today. Listeners, are you sexually satisfied in your relationship? And do you know what sexual choices feel authentic, pleasurable, and joyful? And which ones leave you feeling less than? Well, my guest today is Dr. Alexandra Solomon. She is a professor in the Department of Psychology at Northwestern University, a licensed clinical psychologist, and an international speaker and teacher. She is also the author of a new book called Taking Sexy Back: How to Own Your Sexuality and Create the Relationships You Want. And today, she's going to share with us how to reclaim your sexuality, communicate your desires, and build the satisfying relationships you want. Sounds amazing to me, listeners. So for more information about her or her book, go to dralexandrasolomon.com. So welcome to the program, Dr. Solomon. Great to have you with us today.
It's so good to be with you, Dr. Terry.
Thank you. And I am looking forward to our discussion. But before we get to our specific topic today, what motivated you to write the book, Taking Sexy Back?
Oh, my gosh. Well, so my first book, Loving Bravely, felt to me like a book that I chose to write, you know, and it was a sort of like pushing something up a hill, not a bad way, but it was sort of like the force was mine, right, to sort of do the work of creating this book. And then my publishing company came to me and they said, what do you want to write next? And I knew, but I didn't really want to know because I was scared. And this is the book that really, really wanted to be written. And I just got to this turning point where it was harder to resist the urge to write the book than to just go ahead and be like, okay, fine, I'll just write about it. Because the truth is that as a couples therapist and as a professor, I just have been really aware of how much we struggle to integrate love and sex, how to hold on to those aspects of relationship, but more importantly, how to hold on to those aspects of ourselves and the ways in which, because our culture skews rather sex negative, our conversations about sex tend to be either, you know, it's taboo, or there's sort of these like titillating conversations about sex. I think that we do that inside of ourselves. We sort of split off our sexual self from the rest of us. And I had heard enough stories from my students and my clients, and certainly, you know, my own journey as a woman and as a, you know, intimate partner, had sort of noticed all those ways in which those parts of me are hard to fit together, that it was just like, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to talk about how to integrate and hold onto our sexuality as ours and ours alone. And that our understanding of the relationship between us and our sexual selves then creates the foundation.
Tell me, what were you afraid of? You kept saying, I was afraid to do it.
Well, I think that it's because I think the fear is that in our culture, the topic has been taboo, you know, and here I am, this Northwestern University professor, and I sort of had, you know, there's something rather safe about talking about love and talking about relationships and something that's a bit more complicated about talking about sex. And so it was my own evolution of kind of, how do I want to talk about that? What do I want to bring to the table? And letting go of the idea that some people may get it and really resonate, and others, it may not resonate at all for them, right? Because that is, there's no book on earth where everybody reads it and is like, yes. So that was a part of it also, is letting go of of my fears of how other people would receive the content that I wanted to share.
I love that. And thank you for sharing that fear. I can definitely relate as well as the love doctor. It's safe for me to talk about relationships and love, but it's more difficult and challenging to add in that aspect of sexuality. So I appreciate you sharing that fear. So before we get again to the integration of sex and love, or those two aspects of ourselves, what specifically are you talking about when you say sexy, or even taking sexy back? Help listeners understand what that means. And it's such a provocative title as well, by the way.
It is. Oh my gosh. I am in love with the title. Yes. It is. So basically, I think that when we're talking, you know, this book really is written towards those who've been socialized as women. So, you know, girls and women, but it is the themes in the book really are transcendent. But my conversation in this book is really with a reader who has been socialized as a woman. And so the message we get as women is that we are to be sexy rather than sexual, right? So sexy is this idea, it's a question. It's sort of, how do you perceive me? How do I look in your eyes? It's sort of woman as object rather than woman as subject. And that is the reflection of just our cultural messages, right? Around women's sexuality, something that people have a lot to say about. And there's more talking than listening. So the difference between being sexy and then sexual is a cultivation from the inside of, how do I as a woman tap into my desire? How do I as a woman understand what feels good to me, versus this idea that sex is a duty, or sex is a performance, or sex is something that I do for somebody else, or frankly, something I avoid for fear of how I'm going to be perceived by somebody else. So the shift in this book is taking back that idea of sexy. So sexy can now become something that I really cultivate from the inside out.
So you're really redefining sexy or sexiness to be this aspect of something that I can cultivate as a woman, as a listener, you know, listening to this show, from within myself and not relying on the external standards. Is that correct?
Exactly. And I think that is so profound when a woman thinks about who does my sexuality belong to? And I think there are a lot of interesting players in that game. So if a woman really sits with the question of, who does my sexuality belong to? It may be that as she was growing up, she got very clear messages from her family, you know, that good girls don't, maybe from her religious institution, you know, that her sexuality is reserved for her partner. Right, that it sort of belongs to everybody else but her. And so that's a very powerful shift. One of the things that we really found in the journey of writing this book, I had a dynamite team of graduate students and undergraduate students. And we would have, you know, we were doing all this research around sex education in our country, listening to stories of, you know, of how people were taught about sex, what sex is, what sex isn't. And it was really clear how much kind of anger and grief one might stumble upon when they're asking this question of, who does my sexuality belong to? Because there can be a realization that actually I've never really thought of it as something that is mine and mine alone. This is a part of me. And that can be a pretty profound reckoning. So it's like tapping into that grief and sadness in order to now figure out, okay, so what do I want? What do I want from here?
And once I decide as a woman that I want to own my own sexuality, my own sexual power, my own sexiness, and I just redefined that word like you did. But how do I do that? How do I figure that out?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's a question that begins with a recognition that very few of us actually have all of the information we need. And it's not because, it's not really our fault. The truth is that we as a culture have understood relatively little about the female body until recently. So the last 20 years has been this burgeoning of science around female sexuality. In fact, it wasn't until about the year 2000 when the first female urologist, Dr. Helen O'Connell, mapped the entire anatomy of the clitoris, right? Women have had a clitoris for tens of thousands of years, but we've not understood really what is this part of women's anatomy. In fact, in medical anatomy textbooks, it was often blurred out or just sort of thought of as this little button. But when you, with now the science and us finally asking this question, what scientists have found and now what all of us can understand is the clitoris is this really pretty incredible piece of a woman's body that is, the sole purpose is pleasure. It has no other function besides pleasure. And so it's sort of like once, you know, that can be a really interesting point of information mm-hmm. that then becomes a point of possibility, right? Like, how might I relate to my possibility, to my sexual self, if I were to really rest in this awareness that my body is built for pleasure? I have a part of my body that is built for pleasure. And that's I think, an important piece is just getting information about your basic anatomy, understanding what feels good in your body, what opens you to desire and what shuts you down from desire. Like what helps you feel like you want to move into a sexual space with a partner and what kind of closes that door for you.
Mm-hmm. And so how do I do that? I'm a listener right now and I want to understand my body more. Or I want to understand my, you know, sexual power more. Do I, besides reading your book, obviously, right, Alexandra, do I Google? Do I go to my physician? How do I learn more about my body?
Right. So if we're sticking with this, the sort of realm of the body, that is, there are wonderful resources. In fact, the last in the book, we included an entire resource guide for additional information. And one of the, you know, so you can, so looking and learning the parts and the names is important, but it also is just being with your body. And so that's another really important question is how entitled do I feel to pleasure? That's a really important question for listeners to be asking themselves. Like, what's my relationship to pleasure? And I tell a story in the book about a woman I had this conversation with. And as she thought about her family system, she was really aware of how much the women in her family really were there to put everybody else first. You know, she watched her mother and her grandmother and all her aunties taking care of everybody but themselves, right? Kind of running themselves ragged at holiday parties and working so hard to make sure everybody else is okay. And this woman was realizing the messages she had internalized were really putting everybody else first. And that's the thing about sex and sexual pleasure is it's the space that we go in order to heal ourselves, to feel good within ourselves, or at least it can be that. It doesn't have to be something that we do in order to get somebody else to like us or in order to make somebody else happy. But in order to start viewing sex as a place we go for ourselves to feel good, to let down, to play, to explore, to escape, it has to start with this idea that I actually deserve that. I deserve to take care of me and I deserve to have a place that I go where it's about me feeling good.
I like that. I am worthy as a woman is what you're saying.
Right. And I don't know how much we get that message, especially because the message tends to be, you know, either I think when we're for single women, it's sort of like, you know, good girls don't until they're married or partnered or whatever. But then even in the context of a marriage, that we have this heavy, heavy, like 10,000 years of messaging that, you know, sex is a wifely duty. And so then it's sort of like another way in which she's taking care of her partner. And so this is really an invitation to flip that script in a way that maybe many of your listeners already have. Maybe they already do live in this place of feeling like sex is for them and feeling entitled to that. But it's an invitation to explore what gets in the way. What are the beliefs I have that limit my mm-hmm. sense of entitlement to feeling good?
Mm-hmm. And looking at those beliefs and looking at how I exist or live in those beliefs will be really important for all listeners, whether they've already reclaimed and are feeling sexual and are sexually aware or not. So let's start then with singles, because I know you talk in your book about some of the challenges and possibilities for love and sex in this age of choice or in this age of relationship apps and online dating. What do you think about those challenges and possibilities? And tell us more about that.
Yes. So I think that for people who are single, the biggest question that I get when I'm talking with people who are in the dating world is a question around like, when is it okay to have sex, or when should I have sex? And it can be, it's really challenging to layer in sexuality and getting to know somebody. And there's, I think there's a freedom of living in this time where, you know, sex outside of the context of a marriage is not shamed at all the way that it used to be. But what I really want is for a listener to have ways that she thinks about, how do I know when I'm ready? Like, I'll get questions, you know, sort of like, is it okay to have sex on the first date? And to me, that's a far less interesting question than the question of, how do I know when I'm ready to be intimate with a partner? And sometimes we don't know until we've done it. I think especially for people who are single again and sort of navigating this dating world after coming out of a long time relationship, it can be really hard to know. And so sometimes you have to have that experience of, oh shoot, I really wasn't ready to be intimate with this partner, to take that as a data point rather than like a reflection that somehow you did something wrong or you screwed it up or you made a mistake. It really is a data point. And sometimes you don't know until you know. So part of the journey for people who are single or dating again is figuring out, how do I know what my sexual boundaries are? And that really it's about my centering in on my choice versus, I think what's easy to do is like, I don't want to frustrate a partner. I don't want to seem too easy to a partner, like sort of this, like locating the decision in how somebody else is going to perceive me, which is just another way that women get blocked from connecting into, like, how would I know what I want? How would I know what feels good to me? What do I need in order to feel really safe and ready to kind of share this experience with somebody else?
So you're really asking us then to ask ourselves the question, as you said, when am I ready? What do I feel? Why am I wanting sex, rather than what will sex mean in the relationship or to my partner? And I have to tell you, Alexandra, I get that question all the time as well. People say, when should I have sex? And there's always that should in the question as well. And anytime I think you ask a should statement, you're really focusing the question outside of yourself rather than within. So I really like it about your choices. So, and so what kinds of questions then do you tell your clients to ask themselves to know whether or not they're really ready?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it has to do with how ready are you to be able to advocate for yourself once you are becoming sexual with somebody, and can you talk about it? And I think that there's, with my college students, I certainly encourage a gut check around, if I can't do it sober, I probably am not ready to do it. If I can't talk about it, I'm probably not ready to do it. Like, those can be really kind of clear, simple gut checks. And I think that sometimes we're at risk of overriding our own discomfort because we feel like we're being driven by a should, as you say, rather than turning towards that discomfort and just wondering what it's about. What is the discomfort about? And it may be the discomfort is about, I'm just uncomfortable with sex because I had a lousy sex education, or I am recovering from a sexual trauma, or I'm self-conscious about my body. And so then any of those data points would be an invitation to just some self-compassion, some additional kind of attention and care of the self. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that, I mean, it's not like any of us are ever 100% ready or 100% clear of any baggage, but it's just knowing that I understand where my baggage is and I'm building a relationship with a partner where we can talk about it. That's the most important thing. I think we have these very idealized notions of what good sex looks like, and good sex somehow is seamless, and there doesn't need to be communication because everyone just sort of like understands each other intuitively, versus real world lovemaking requires conversation and feedback, and there's fumbles and things don't go smoothly, and there needs to be just some space for humor and humility. And so that's a really big, a big sign also, is that you are feeling with that partner like you can let your guard down, like you can have stuff not all the way figured out. You don't have to perform. You can just kind of be and let things unfold together.
Right. And I love that. We do think that it's going to unfold perfectly, like on television or in the movies, and instead recognize that there can be fumbles, there can be discussion. Obviously, you want discussion and communication. And I really think that listeners should understand those gut checks that you talked about first. Can you talk about sex with your partner? And second, at least for your students or for younger adults, can you do it when you're sober? And I probably shouldn't have even said younger adults. I'm talking about all adults.
Yeah. You might be 45 and still feeling like that. Absolutely.
Exactly. I like that. And your compassion for yourself and understanding your baggage and why you might not feel comfortable at the moment and trying to understand, identify, and then understand that. I really think that's important information for listeners to hear. Now, also, you know, moving to listeners who are in a long-term relationship, Alexandra, you talk a lot about how this sexual awareness can lead to a more fulfilling relationship. Help listeners understand about that connection as well.
Right. You know, research has found that in couples who've been together for over a decade, the percentage of couples who could accurately tell the researcher what their partner likes in bed was surprisingly low. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you've made love to the same person for a decade or decades doesn't necessarily mean you know them any better if you haven't asked the questions or responded to the questions or been able to have the conversation. And again, I understand all the barriers to the conversation. If you grew up in a home where sex was not talked about, that early conditioning, that early imprinting does cast a shadow still. So I understand that, but I think that it's really important for people in a longer term relationship to kind of break down that notion that sex ought to be easy. And if it's not easy, something's either wrong with me, or it's wrong with you, or it's wrong with us. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case. Sexual problems, sexual ebbs and flows are really normative. And the sexual problem isn't the problem. The problem is when a couple gets too uncomfortable or too disconnected or too ashamed of themselves to be able to even invite a conversation about, like, what's going on? Like, we're in a dry spell. What do you think is going on? What's going on for you? And here's what I think is going on for me. So what I always want couples to be able to do is take that sexual problem and put it in front of them and then stand shoulder to shoulder and look together at the problem rather than it's either my problem or it's your problem.
Right. And, you know, I heard listeners get really anxious, as you were saying, like, hey, there's been a dry spell. Let's talk about it. What's going on? We only have a few minutes left, but can you, Alexandra, help listeners with a strategy or a tip on how to share or communicate that want or that need for talking about sex?
Yes, I spend a lot of time on this in the book because I think it's a really tough one. And couples may need to have some strategies to make those early. I think the bottom line is it gets easier to talk about the more you talk about it. But in the beginning, you may need some scaffolding, like some support, some training wheels. And so maybe it happens, you know, via letters. You write little letters back and forth. Or maybe you do it in the third person. I met a couple one time who uses puppets to have their sexual conversations because they were uncomfortable doing it themselves. But their puppets could have the conversation that was too hard for them to have. So inviting some creativity and knowing this doesn't have to be like sitting at a table face to face, looking at each other's eyes and talking about what we want. You can have some creative ways to kind of get into this conversation. And that everything needs to be framed as, I love us. I believe in us. I want more for us. It's not critical. It's not me tearing you down or me pointing a finger at you. It's me saying, I'm so excited about us. I believe in us. And I just want us to expand in this way. And I wrote an entire chapter for men in this book because especially for a heterosexual couple, if she's healing and growing this part of herself, I want him to be able to meet her there rather than feeling like somehow he screwed it up or he did it wrong. Because men, we didn't talk as much today about male sexuality, but men are certainly loaded up with really, really problematic messages around their sexual selves as well. And so that all comes into the bedroom with the couple.
I love everything that you just said, Alexandra. I mean, trying these creative ways with letters or puppets, making sure that it's not this serious conversation face to face, focusing on the positive, listeners, as well as something I heard, a message that you said, Alexandra. And I would love to have you come back and talk about male sexuality and the messages that males learn about their sexuality and taking back their sexuality as well. If you would do that, that would be wonderful.
Consider it done. I would love it. I would love it.
That would be great. So thank you so much for joining me today, Alexandra. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
You too. Thank you so much for having me on.
And again, listeners, if you're interested in learning more about Dr. Alexandra Solomon or her new book called Taking Sexy Back, How to Own Your Sexuality and Create the Relationships You Want, please go to dralexandrasolomon.com. And as always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here to help all your relationships, including the one with yourself, be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com, where I provide you with science-based relationship advice that's easy to understand and include in your life. So listeners, until next time, here's to your healthy, happy relationships.